Oh, San Francisco, 89.5. Up next is Reality Sandwich with Rafe Biggs and Rob Stewart. Enjoy.
You're listening to Reality Sandwich 89.5 KPOO. I'm your host, Dr. Ray Ferrick Biggs of Some Evolution. I'm joined today with my producer and co-host, Rob Stewart.
Hello, listeners.
Hello, everyone. And today we have a very exciting show. We have a John Henry Parker. John is a military father who lost his son, Danny, suffered from post-traumatic stress in a motorcycle accident. He returned two tours from Afghanistan, and he is the host of Harvesting Wisdom Radio for veterans and families, and is prepared to launch a new national project called the Purple Star Veterans and Families, a nonprofit community support network to honor veterans of all eras and families through the trials of homecoming. Hey, John, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing awesome. So good to have you on the show.
Fantastic to be here. I just got done doing my show about 5 minutes ago, and you know, it's funny. I just got done talking to some really incredible veterans, and so now I'm talking to you, and I'm looking forward to sharing some ideas.
Fantastic. Why don't you share with the listeners just a little bit more about your background, how you got into doing the work that you're doing today?
Well, I spent the last 25 years in the field of personal, professional, and transformational development, and you and I worked together. Gosh, it's been such a long time.
It's been 17 years.
17 years when we worked for Tony Robbins together.
Yep. Those are some crazy days.
We just had such a great amount of fun. So I've been in the field of this personal development, and that has been my career. And little did I know I was being prepared for this this odyssey called homecoming for military veterans. My son called me from the Pakistan border on November 3rd of 2003, about 10:30 in the morning. He said he's just too screwed up to come home. Mm. And he proceeded to tell me about some of his experiences. And I pretty much dropped out of business and what I was doing to kind of get, you know, start looking for some solutions for my own son. And I found that there's an incredibly huge unmet need. And in fact, you know, right now, it's a terrible statistic, but 18 veterans a day that actually made it home safely from Afghanistan and Iraq are committing suicide every single day.
That's horrible.
It's amazing. It's such a tragedy.
Yeah, this is the height of these statistics, and I don't see any end in sight because of the repeated and extended deployments.
Hmm. So, wow, what do you think are some of the solutions, or I mean, what are some different possibilities that you're working on that can transform this?
Well, I think fundamentally what I've discovered, because my dad was a Korean War combat veteran in the Marine Corps,
right,
and then he was in the Air Force as a reconnaissance photographer in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So I was raised with a very violent, you know, traumatized combat veteran father.
Mm-hmm.
And although I love him, we do have some separation because it was very, very challenging. So I have some awareness of homecoming. And then having gone in the Marine Corps myself for 3 years doing peacetime, and now having a son who comes home with a Purple Heart and two tours, and then ultimately ends up, you know, dealing with his own symptoms of PTS, post-traumatic stress, by getting on his motorcycle sometimes late at night and doing over 100 miles an hour down unlit roads outside of Syracuse, New York. And that's how he he died suddenly. You know, we've got, you know, an epidemic of veterans taking their own lives and dying from danger-seeking activities. And so I think the biggest challenge that I see is the biggest barrier to care, if you want to call it that, is the veteran's own inability to ask for help.
Right.
We're trained to get the job done, not to raise our hand and ask for help when the going gets a little tough. Mm-hmm. It's a warrior ethos, and we've got to realize that's what's going on and decompress that before they come home, ideally, before they separate.
Right.
John, what's a way that some of these returning veterans can use their kind of military background, maybe their warrior instinct, to kind of push themselves into transformation? Is there something that they can do with that, or is that just something they need to overcome?
Well, I think what goes on is that you obviously have triggers. And for some people, they see something. For a lot of these folks coming back, they see something on the side of the road that looks like a trash can. Well, that looks like an improvised explosive device to them. Mm. You hear it called IEDs. Mm-hmm. They smell diesel. They instantly go back. My son, when he'd go running, if he got dirt in his mouth, it would take him right back to Afghanistan.
Wow.
And so I think the hope of any kind of transformational work or any kind of counseling or therapy, you're never going to lose the experience. But I think what occurs is you lose the intensity of it if you know how to recognize your triggers. And so the biggest hope is that you help people step out of themselves when they feel their body temperature change or their intensity change or their voice tone change. Well, something just happened. Mm-hmm. And if you can step out of it and not get caught up in it, you can observe that the trigger just happened. And then you can start using tools and techniques to reduce the severity of the episode. And then ultimately you'll have fewer and farther episodes that are spaced out. And in between those episodes is where quality of life resides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, John, you and I share a lot of background and training around NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and somatics. And it seems to me like, you know, these soldiers are, their skills are so embodied to, you know, protect themselves and to, you know, deal with trauma in the way that they're just automatically conditioned. I'm just curious, what do you see is possible around maybe applying some of the mind-body approaches that you and I have studied?
Well, bottom line is it takes training to compress the hearts and minds of these young folks going into the military for them to prepare for what they're going to encounter, mm-hmm. what they're going to witness, and unfortunately what they're going to be given license to do and to perpetrate on others, you know, under the name of what they've been ordered to do. So, you know, this is really a big challenge. So they equally as important as they need training when they come out. Mm-hmm. So I think what's necessary, speaking to your point, Rafe, is we have to find ways to decompress them before they get out of the military. Because once you get out, you don't want to go back.
Sure.
And if you say you got a problem before you get out, they'll keep you on psychological hold or medical hold. So a lot of these guys and gals get out thinking they just go to the VA right. and get their benefits, which is a real nightmare in and of itself. Hmm. So to your point, getting training to decompress is what my whole life's work is all about, is how do you do that? How do you put thought leaders together in modalities and technologies that provide self-care tools to where you can train these folks out of compression mm-hmm. In their bodies, in their spirit, and connect them back with self?
Right. And, John, does the military, do they have any kind of, is there any kind of program in place? Are they even acknowledging that this decompression is an important piece?
Well, one of the reasons why I was excited to be on your show, Rafe, is this is a conversation that needs to be on the national spotlight.
Right.
Decompression, and it's not. And the military and the VA. See, when you're in the military, you're an employee of the Department of Defense. When you get out, you then become a dependent or responsibility of the Veterans Administration. You know, most people don't understand what decompression is about, and the VA and the military and the DOD have a lot of programs they could offer. But if the veterans are not able to ask for help, they're not doing as much good as they could.
Right.
So that's the whole premise of this conversation: is how do we have a conversation? Because right now, unfortunately, what it feels like to a lot of vets that I talk to, I'm going to just use this as a way of explaining it. It's like they out-process you, and you check off all the lists, and as you're going through, you just don't want to say a whole lot that'll cause you to be put on hold.
Right.
And it's like you're handed a grenade, and you're told to hold on to it really tight. They pull the pin out, and then they help you out the door. And all you're doing is holding it as tightly as you can because you know what you're capable of.
Right.
You know that you're going to scare the hell out of people if you're not careful, and that you know what you've been through. And so a lot of people are coming back, and they're so compressed, they're trying to act normal, but it's really showing up in a lot of bad ways.
Mm. Yeah, I totally think you're on to something huge here, and I think that it could be even taken a step further, meaning all returning vets, counting the ones that are asking for help, counting the ones that aren't asking for help, mandatory decompression.
Well, that's the whole program is about mandatory. You hit on it. If you know, you give a veteran an option, they're going to say, I'm fine. You want
right.
to talk about it? Nope.
Right.
No, I'm actually really just fine. I'm okay. We hear that all the time. It has to be mandatory.
Right.
And it's not a counseling program. It's a skills transfer program. It has to be experiential-based,
right.
immersion-based.
Totally, yeah. Exactly.
And I think if you approach it as training, because that's what they're used to, they went through training to be in the military and to be a soldier and to be a warrior. And so part of that is, you know, the training to learn to live in the world and be powerful and be centered and be able to recognize what your condition tendencies are and to have different skills for, you know, moving back to a place where they feel connected to themselves, they feel centered in who they are, and they're able to take more skillful action.
I agree, and I'm really excited to work with you, Rafe, about, you know, the work that you're doing, because mm-hmm. I think that there's such a huge place. You know that more veterans are becoming disabled from motorcycle accidents mm-hmm. than from combat?
Right.
You know, so you got this Bethesda and Walter Reed dilemma of all these heroes that are coming back through there for a variety of reasons and being released back into society. And the work that you guys are doing, I'm very excited about. I want to support it, and I want to try to take it into the military to help you. Okay?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm all down with that.
Yeah, that'd be great. Hey,
yeah.
John, why don't you give our listeners kind of a background or a look into the modalities and practices that these veterans would be going through in a decompression type of situation?
Well, I think there's some really really great things. Like there's a guy named Dr. David Berselli who's got a really awesome process called Trauma Release Exercises, TRE, and I think his website's traumaprevention.com. You can Google him. You can also YouTube him. He teaches a process that doesn't require you to revivify your experience. He teaches you a process. He's been in war-torn nations around the world for decades, helping people deal with the somatic aspects of trauma, how your body holds trauma. Mm-hmm. And what he's discovered is that most people hold trauma in their psoas muscles up in the pelvic area.
Yeah.
And the ability to fatigue the calves and the quads and the glutes to where you can learn how to evoke these tremors up in the psoas muscles allows people to relieve themselves of these traumatic experiences instantaneously and continuously whenever they need self-care.
Wow.
That's cool.
That's something I would love to work with, because with my own trauma, with my spinal cord injury, where I hold the most tension is in my psoas and in my pelvis.
I mean, that's a good example. He's a good friend of mine, and I'm going to be having him on my show, and he's going to be an integral part of decompression.
Mm-hmm.
Other types of things. It all has to do with self-care. If you can't learn, embody, and teach a skill, it's not going to propagate.
Right, and then also having a community that supports you in those skills.
Yes. I mean, so it's constantly reinforced. So mm-hmm. another self-aware tool, set of tools might be Tom Stone over at Great Life Technologies. You know, he's got some really cool skills that, you know, I think on one level would be like really advanced NLP techniques where you're actually going into your trauma and you're locating it in the body and you're actually learning skills on how to dissolve it and just really kind of to transcend it. And it's a very elegant process that is being taught to veterans right now, and they're getting a lot out of it. And again, skills transfer.
Right.
How can you propagate this right down to the platoon and squad leaders to where when guys are coming off mm-hmm. their missions, they're even learning this before they go on deployment. So when they get stressed, they know how to deal with it.
That would be a fresh idea.
Yeah. So what I'm about is bringing things like this and advanced forms of neurofeedback that don't require you to revivify anything. Mm-hmm. You sit down and it maps out your brain and your frontals and your centrals and your parietals and your occipitals and your temporals and your midline. It actually shows where trauma resides and allows you to have some reduction of your symptoms. And I've seen firsthand that work for a lot of people. So there are some really nice advanced forms of neurofeedback that I would include in a training like this.
Fantastic.
Does that give you enough?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, you can also share with the listeners. I know one of our teachers, Richard Strozzi Heckler, and I've spoken with him about, you know, he's done a lot of work with the military about bringing some of his somatic practices into play as well.
What I love about Richard's work is it's easy, and it is about being able to see what's going on in your body and to check in with it and to move energy. A lot of times when people get stressed, they're holding on to it and they're crunching. Mm-hmm. They're literally revivifying and they are obsessing over it. And unless you can move that energy, you know, you're going to feel stuck.
Right. I mean, Richard's work, when you get down to just the fundamental awareness of your body and just being aware of the sensations that are going on, being aware of where you're holding these habitual patterns. And then you have a practice of coming back to center, you know, just dropping your attention down that area right below your navel and just breathing. I mean, just teaching when you're stressed, what do? Most of us hold our breaths and just teaching you to breathe.
I hold my breath a lot.
Your breast?
When I'm nervous.
Our breath, yeah. Anyhow, but it's such powerful work. I mean, I have been using it, you know, ever since I started, 10 years ago. And then after my spinal cord injury, I think one of the reasons I've been able to heal as quickly as I have and to be able to have more and more sensation is through these practices. I mean, it's so simple and so powerful. It's very exciting.
Well, I'm not sure how much time we have, but there's also a whole other dimension of the families of the veterans.
Yeah, go into it.
We have plenty of time. So let's get the bottom line
is, you know, since before Homer wrote the Iliad 2,600 years ago, you know, veterans and, you know, warriors have been going off to do battle, and families have awaited their eventual return. So this is not a new phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I really want to do is I really want to help families look at a couple of fundamental questions. And I mean, really, the biggest thing is, who are you becoming?
Mm.
You know, who are you becoming? What are you doing today to help increase your capacity to understand how you deal with your own trauma and stress? Because you're going to be asked to hold a space for somebody coming home, and there's no instruction book on what you should do. And so what I'm really excited about are really working with authors like Maria Nemeth, who wrote a book called Mastering Life's Energies, and Richard's work, Richard Strozzi's work, and other folks who are, you know, really, you're talking about the capacity to get outside of your own problems to where you can actually deal and cope with what is being presented to you without getting triggered into your own fight, freeze, or flight responses, and to where you can relax.
Mm-hmm.
Because the biggest challenge I see with these suicides is that it's the epitome. You know, hope dies last. You know, well, guess what? Well, hope is no longer a viable strategy. Mm-hmm. We've got to have something that gives these folks some real skills. And so I think by helping the families really understand what's going on and giving them some experiential training, you know, in this work, it's going to provide major benefits. Because the challenge that I see is as soon as a veteran picks up that somebody's losing hope or they don't know how to deal with them, they retreat further into their own self, and they suffer in deeper silence. And that's when self-medication happens with drugs and alcohol, and they start spiraling downward. I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but one out of every four homeless men in America are veterans. You know, we've got a real epidemic and a cascading effect. So I think it has to be going along, not just teaching these veterans coping skills and decompression skills, but also the family members, helping them understand how to open up that space to where they can be more forgiving and unconditionally supportive and loving when it's most needed.
Yeah, I think this is a really important piece that you're bringing is the families, including the whole system. And I mean, if these families also learn these skills for managing their own stress, and then they can help to support the veterans when they come back, I think that's just it's spot on. And, you know, the other piece that we were talking about is this Purple Heart program. Why don't you speak a little bit about that?
Well, actually, it's called Purple Star Veterans and Families.
Okay, thank you.
What this is about is if you're a military mom and your child is deployed, you can become a Blue Star mom. And technically, you can become a Blue Star dad, but when my son was deployed, I didn't join Blue Star Moms because I'm a dad, so I didn't know that you could be a Blue Star dad as well. However, it's a congressionally chartered organization. What that means is Congress thought enough of this problem with children being deployed that in 1966, you know, President Carter did a congressional charter to recognize Blue Star Moms. It was actually started in 1943. If you saw Saving Private Ryan, you saw that the mom had a flag with five stars on it. Well, that's mm-hmm. Blue Star Moms. If your child dies while in serving their country in combat at war, then you become a Gold Star Mom. And that was congressionally chartered in 1917. And, you know, the challenge that I see is, you know, my own experience with my son was when he came home, I was no longer capable of being a Blue Star dad, and he didn't pass away while he was technically still in the service, mm-hmm. so I couldn't become a Gold Star dad. And I'm not really a big joiner, but what I'm saying is when I need support, I really need it.
Right.
But when I don't, I do pretty well. And so 18 a day, suicide rate, that's 6,570 families a year that need a bereavement network. You know, the volume of families that are suffering because their kids died from speed-related danger-seeking activities. Well, what are they going to join? And I just think people need more support. And so since the fact that we're losing more veterans to the trials of homecoming and suicide than are actually losing in combat, I think it's time for a congressionally chartered organization for today's needs. And it's not just for the families who are suffering because the children died from suicide and motorcycle accidents. It's anybody who still isn't home from Vietnam or Korea.
Mm.
You know, anybody who's been a supporter or a caregiver, they're Purple Star veterans and families. That's really the fabric of what we're talking about is strengthening the existing safety net. We don't need another organization to be redundant out there. So by being congressionally chartered, my point is the American Legion, the VFW, Veterans of Foreign War, Vietnam Veterans of America, they all have their own groups and affiliations, and you have to be certain qualifications to join each one of those. Well, what I think is interesting is that Blue Star and Gold Star Moms are honored and welcome in all cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have is an opportunity to have Purple Star veterans and families be a homecoming support network that strengthens the existing fabric out there and gives people something to be part of.
The question that keeps coming in my mind, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are kind of feeling a little bit of, you know, this is an emotional topic, and I'm thinking, like, what's the military and the government doing right now,
right,
and why isn't this happening already, and what needs to happen to make this a reality?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to make sure this doesn't get hijacked by somebody's political agenda in a photo op.
Right.
Because right now, I'm telling you, this is a good enough idea that people, you know, people are getting behind it. I'm amazed at, from all levels of government and the military and retired military and the civilian sector, they can see that Purple Star Veterans and Families is an organization worth building, and it's desperately needed. And I think it's really important that we don't attack the VA and the DOD. They're doing a lot. If you look at the web, they got an incredible resource that's growing with this whole social media technology and video on demand. I want to point at what they're doing right. And also, if they're doing something that needs to be improved, I want to give them suggestions. I want to coax them along. But think about it. You got 24 million living veterans multiplied by their spouses, children, parents, grandparents, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, coworkers, fellow students, employers, learning institutions. You got over 100 million people that are directly or indirectly impacted by war and deployment.
Wow.
That's a third of the electorate.
Wow.
We don't have to get political at all. All we have to do is collect our voice and say, hey, mandatory decompression program, guys, get with it. Let's help you design it. Let's be accountable. Let's get into the conversation. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, I think that's great.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. A while back, you were visiting. We were chatting about a possible television show that you're trying to put together. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Well, it's kind of under wraps, but it's an important aspect of the homecoming process. I do a radio show as well,
right?
You know, really, what it is about interviewing thought leaders.
Yep.
You know, and it's about talking about this problem of decompression. You know, this is a huge unmet need that nobody has really, you know, cracked the code on. So just like they had to figure out how to compress these veterans before they went to war. You know, it's going to take a while, but I think there's a great potential in the last 90 days of when somebody is out processing from the military. They are literally brain dead. They just want to get out.
Right.
They've decided it's no longer for them. They're not going to reenlist, and they're going through their checklist. Now, right then, is the time to captivate them and put them through a gentle immersion experiential process that will allow them to look at how to repurpose their mission in life, to establish a new sense of purpose and meaning, and to help look at that one-dimensional military bearing that has served them that now needs to be transcended. I mean, you still have to, as a veteran, you can still reach out and choke somebody if you absolutely had to, but you probably never will. So you don't have to live like that necessarily. And you got kids to come home to, and you got a family to come home to, and you got relationships to come home to, and you really need to be present. Otherwise, they will check out because they know you're not really here. So there's a lot at stake for people learning how to embody a decompression method.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. My dad's a returned vet. He was a Vietnam fighter and dealt with things in his own way, repressed anger. But like you were just saying, he's 63 now and finally decompressed. It took him, you know, 40 years to move through the things that affected him in Vietnam. And now he's finally at the point where he's more open. He's older. He's more mellow. And finally, the kind of conditioning has wore out. And it's kind of sad in a way, but it's natural in a way. And my question is, what can kids do that are here right now that aren't in a decompression program that they can start? What type of practice should they look for? What type of people should they try to get in touch with?
Well, I would say what happened for me is I would say focus on who you're becoming. And one of the ways to do that, I learned something before I got out of the service, this guy took me aside and he said, hey, look, there's something you're going to realize. In a couple of weeks when you get home, the world is exactly the same, but you've changed. Mm. If I were you, I would go to the closest bookstore, I'd go to the self-help section, and I would find anything. And I mean anything that jumps off the shelf at me, and I start reading about who I'm becoming. Mm. And so, you know, a natural book for veterans might be Richard Strozzi's book, you know, In Search of the Warrior Within.
Yeah.
He was part of a group when he taught Aikido inside of a group of people that went into the Green Berets to teach them centering skills. And it's the book is his daily journal of that experience. That'd be something that might be interesting. But literally, I would tell these guys and gals, go to the bookstore. Find anything that jumps off the shelf at you and start reading about who you're becoming. That worked for me. It actually got me into the field of personal development.
Yeah, that's how I started too.
It set a trajectory.
Same with me.
In a 5-minute conversation with a guy that I'd never seen again, it put my brain on fire and I stopped focusing on how stressed I was about getting out of the military. I stopped focusing on the fact that I was a Marine and I had this hard-ass mentality. And it really didn't take me more in a few days to realize that the world didn't need another hard-ass Marine who could parachute out of helicopters and carry big, heavy packs. So really, find something that lights your brain on fire about who you're becoming, and that's the path to dealing with your symptoms. And pretty soon, people say, well, you know what? I am pretty tense. Maybe I should see somebody about this. But that has to come from the veteran's own words, their own suggestion, because if you suggest they need help, the implication is that they're broken, and they need to be fixed, and that's the fastest way to piss them off.
Right. It's kind of amazing how once you just make that decision to go to the bookstore to get just to check out books, you've already started the process of healing.
Yep.
You know, you've already taken that giant leap, that big step, and the work has started. And just by making that decision, you've already done a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first books that I picked up were The Magic of Thinking Big by Schwartz. The second one was Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz, where people actually have surgery but still can't, you know, they still have this self-concept that's limiting, even though most people see them as being pretty attractive. And the third book was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
That's a good one.
So, awesome. I mean, I just would encourage people to go find something that speaks to you, and that in and of itself will stop the rumination of what problems you're holding on to. And like Rafe was talking about, you know, the somatic works of how you're embodying your trauma. You know, how do you do trauma? Well, you have a strategy. Your body knows how to do it. You're good at it.
Right.
So figure out what that strategy is, and you can basically change it just by looking at it and observing it, you change it.
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, you know, the more I just be with what is, then things just transform. The more I resist, it seems like it persists. But if I just, like, be with and express whatever I'm feeling, it totally transforms. And oftentimes people don't feel safe expressing their fear, expressing their anger, expressing their vulnerability. But if we can start to have an opportunity just to be with those emotions and express them, I think that's an important piece, then all that can shift very, 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 very quickly. Just like yesterday, you know, you and I were talking, I was feeling down and depressed, and I just took a moment afterwards just to really feel those emotions and just have a good cry. And guess what? I felt so much better. It was amazing, just like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, the other piece you mentioned about becoming, I think is an important piece, is finding purpose. You know, finding a purpose in your life that is, you know, bigger than who you are.
Well, a great book to pick up is Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. He was a psychiatrist in Auschwitz who basically lost everything. And when they took his wife and children away, and he was standing there naked, and they made him take off his wedding ring, it was in that moment that he decided, the only thing I am in control of is how I respond to my captors. And he created an entire body of work called logotherapy, which stands for meaning therapy. And that's a great book because you really have to repurpose yourself in your thinking, even if you've had certain kinds of traumas or that aren't war-related. But, you know, just speaking to veterans, you know, the biggest thing that they have to look at is there's nothing more important than keeping your buddies alive. It's even above yourself. The Marine Corps, their motto, the ethos is, Unit, Corps, God, and Country, which means my buddies next to me, the Marine Corps, my God, and then my country. That's what the Marine Corps ethos is. And other forces have similar conducts and ethos. But your ability to actually look at repurposing your life and creating new meaning is a huge part of the homecoming dilemma. Because if you don't have that, you have nothing that you're moving towards. All you're doing is running away from whatever you experienced. But if you don't know what you're moving towards, you know, that could be an identity crisis that could lead to this downward spiral and the loss of hope.
Right, absolutely. Hey, John, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a few more minutes, and we'll listen to more interesting conversations around how the veterans can transform themselves. So you're listening to KPOO 89.5, Reality Sandwich. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO. This is Reality Sandwich. I'm your host, Dr. Ray Ferrick Biggs. And today we are interviewing John Henry Parker. Hey, John.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Great. So, we've got another like 20 minutes. We can talk about all kinds of things. What's kind of a burning question do you think that a lot of veterans are dealing with at this time?
That's a really interesting question. I think a lot of it comes back to, I think, what we were parting with earlier is, what do I do now?
Right.
You know, how do I fit back in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just talking to a guy a few minutes ago on my show, and he was saying the life expectancy of a career Marine is 5 years after they separate from military service.
Wow.
Jeez.
That's terrible.
We become so identified and embodied with that sense of who we are and that mission and that purpose, and that biggest thing is that identity.
Right. You know, that's a really good point, and it just makes me keep, trying to relate this to my own trauma and how things have changed so much. I mean, as listeners know, before my injury, I was doing, I have a PhD in organization psychology. I was doing executive coaching. I had a very different life, and after I broke my neck, I was, trying to figure out, I want to come back and work. I'm trying to figure out, how do I integrate the leadership work? And then I had this burning, interest in the area of sexuality and disability, just my personal interest. And I'm sure a lot of veterans out there are come back and say, wow, if I'm paralyzed or disabled, I no longer feel like a man. And they're trying to figure out, issues around that. So for myself, I just finally, decided, this is a real passion of mine. I'm going to move towards this. And I really want to help other veterans and people with trauma, have intimate, loving relationships. And now all of a sudden, my life is just, things have aligned in a different way. I feel like I'm on purpose. I'm doing what I love to do. But it took some time to figure that out. But I think once we have a sense of what we're here to be doing on this earth and who we can become, then things come into focus. And it's amazing. Like people and energies align. And it's just quite extraordinary.
Well, I want to turn the tables here a little bit. I know you're interviewing me, but I want to talk a little bit about you, Rafe. If the listeners will notice, when I first said hello, I said, "How's it going, Eric?"
Right. Right.
And I'd like you to speak to that a little bit, because I knew you before your accident.
Yeah.
And what I said to you is that it was just amazing how you were traveling around the world, going through yoga and deep meditation retreats.
Mm-hmm.
And you were going inside to learn what's going on inside. All of a sudden, you were given this, I don't know if the right way to say it is a gift, but you were given this opportunity to live inside. Mm-hmm. And your accident, is very, very interesting. I mean, we talked a lot about this, but I used to call you Eric because that was your name. But this transformation for you is created an entirely new being that I now know as Wraith. Can you?
Well, I'll speak just a little bit about the whole name thing, because a lot of people ask me. So my birth name is Ralph Eric Biggs, and my father's name is Ralph, and so I went by Eric most of my life. That's just what people called me. I never really connected so much with the name Ralph, and then a friend of mine told me, because I told him my background in English and German and Irish, he's like, well, it's also a Welsh pronunciation is the word name Rafe. And I was like, wow, Rafe. I really like that. That feels energetically, good. So I was just trying it on as I was traveling through Thailand and India. And, my neck injury happened almost 7 years ago. It's amazing how fast time flies. But I was doing yoga and meditation in India up in Dharamsala. And I was on a patio rooftop one night after the meditation retreat. And we were enjoying the stars. And some friends started playing some music. And people started dancing. I noticed there was no guardrail around the perimeter of the roof. So instinctively, I picked up a candle, go place it by the edge so everyone could see where the edge of the roof was. And the candle blinded me for a split second. And I stepped off and fell just 10 feet. And the way I landed, fractured my neck. And I have to say that was, probably a tragedy. And it definitely, in some ways could be looked at as a tragedy. It was an opportunity for me to really begin to embody. It was like, God was saying, okay, well, you're ready to have transformation happen. Here you go. And so it was very much of a kind of a spiritual awakening that, at the time, I had no idea, but I knew, I just had this sense of knowing that everything happens for a purpose. And so I was just like, you know, this is a new opportunity, and I'm going to figure out a way to live in this new body and, you know, find some extraordinary way of sharing, you know, what I've been learning.
Well, we're talking about veterans coming back and what they're going through, and those are for the ones who, you know, are relatively capable physically. They have, a lot of them have injuries. A lot of them have orthopedic injuries and pain and and all kinds of anxiety-related things. But I'm really interested in supporting and working with you, Rafe, around the veterans who are coming back that have been disabled, because I think your journey is an incredible one. And regardless of how you were physically traumatized, you know, your life was changed just like theirs was in an instant.
Yep.
And what you're left with is how to live a life. And granted, they also must, which is really challenging, it's, you know, polytrauma is when you have two or three things combined that they're trying to work with.
Mm.
You know, you've got psychological and physical injuries, you know, two or three or four different types. It's a whole field of polytrauma that's coming about. I think you're one of the biggest contributions you can make would be to find a handful of veterans. I'd help you do it. And that you can work with, and then have them start to embody the work to take it into other veterans so they can start seeing what intimacy is, how to have live a life and transcend an identity that they had versus what's really here now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the work I would love to do, and I've been having some conversations with some people at the VA down in Palo Alto, because it's like, you know, the first step to have an intimate, loving relationship with others, it's first step is to have it with yourself. And you have to be intimate and real and embrace and love yourself. And that's so difficult for so many people, because after any kind of trauma, especially a physical trauma or an emotional trauma, I mean, they're all related. They all affect every aspect of ourselves. It's difficult to, you know, accept it. And it's taken me 7 years to really fully accept. And there's moments I go back into my head and just feel like unattractive or don't feel capable, but I'm able to recognize that's just a story that I'm making up in this moment. And what's really true is that, you know, we're all extraordinary human beings, and you know, there's so much that's possible.
Well, I've been listening to a teacher by the name of Adi Ashanti lately, and it's really opening up my eyes to this whole conversation of non-duality. And, you know, for a lot of veterans, this is like totally a conversation I would never bring up until a long time after their journey into transformation.
Yeah.
You know, but when people are ready, you got to take them where they want to go.
Yeah.
And so I would say that what you're talking about, even the self-love comment that you made, Rafe, it's a huge area because, you know, interesting, it's all about male-female energy, and we have both as men.
Mm-hmm.
But the implication to most men, you know, especially for veterans, if you talk about, you know, feminine energy, female energy, you know, what's the first thing is that they immediately the implication is somehow that we played with dolls when we were young boys, and then the first thing they do is deflect with some kind of humor,
right?
And so it's really kind of a taboo area. But and in fact, like Richard Strozzi's work, what he was teaching them was how to settle down, the intuitive skills. Well, those are feminine qualities.
Sure.
And when you can put this vernacular in a way that veterans understand it, and you can help them understand, it's about resilience training.
Yes,
it's about preparedness. It's about being super, super deeply aware.
Right.
It's the quiet skills that a sniper would have when they have to lay silent for days. You know, you have to put it in a way that matches their model of the world, but you're really, what you're doing is you're helping them, you're bringing them into other qualities that toward their body can, and their way of being can calm down. And so you asked earlier about, you know, some of the things that I thought about. Well, the Native American teachings and First Nations teachings of Canada have been some of the only things that I have found dramatic relief in from my own suffering, from the loss of my son and from my own military experiences, you know, doing sweat lodges and doing ceremony. And, you know, I would say that there are a lot of teachings out there that that we can learn from. And I find it fascinating that the Native American and First Nations people are so loving and so giving that they want to offer. They want to be of help, just like they always have. And so I don't want to underestimate that whole body of work. And so, you know, there's a continuum of self-care. where I think it's experiential. I think it's something that people, in the, especially in the military, they learn through experiential skills transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to think about, you know, the kinds of work, you know, video-based content on the net is really a great opportunity for veterans to learn vicariously and not have to be, you know, stigmatized or looked at, you know, that they're asking for help, you know, reading these books. So I think one of the biggest challenges we're going to be encountering and will encounter for some time is that whole nature, what I was talking about, this the nature of asking for help in and of itself. Mm-hmm. It's hard enough to get a man to ask for directions, let alone to get a veteran to ask for help.
Right. Absolutely.
It's a stigma that somehow I'm weak.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. It's a stigma, but I think if you put it in the terms like you were speaking earlier about, you know, those quiet skills, the intuitive skills, there's just so much possibility, and I think that's a key word, is just giving the soldiers more possibilities that they can draw from and letting them choose. So if you create a whole, you know, buffet of different skills they can learn and teachers, and they can gravitate towards just one, because, you know, it's just as I know it just takes one teacher to start to open you up, and then that path starts to be created on itself.
It takes care of itself. And you have to start somewhere, and if it's a military author, you know, if it's somebody that has a personal development path, you know, just start there.
Yeah.
You know, so you just have to start somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's a really good plan, is working with some of the other leaders in the veteran community that are open, and having them be the role models, because they'll be the ones that the other soldiers will look up to and say, wow, if this guy's doing meditation and this guy's doing you know, these different skills and yoga and you know, Native American sweat lodges, it's like, wow, maybe there's some possibility.
Yeah.
But you just have to start where they're at first. And I think the biggest part is just allowing them to be heard, and also allowing them to give them the opportunity to speak up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you mind if I talk about veterans and families and just the Purple Star Project a minute?
Please do.
Absolutely. We have about 10 more minutes, so just go right ahead.
Well, what's needed right now is, you know, I think the biggest thing is, as I mentioned, that all these different, you know, orders and cultures, like the VFW and the American Legion, they all welcome Blue Star and Gold Star moms. And so I'm really encouraging people to go to harvestingwisdom.com or to another website, veteransandfamilies.org, all spelled out one word, veteransandfamilies.org. And, you know, go to harvestingwisdom.com and take the community survey. Tell us what you're thinking, especially if you're impacted by war and deployment. You know, if you think about it, if you're not one of those immediate or extended family members or coworkers I talked about earlier, you probably had a dad or a grandfather. You sat around the kitchen table and listened to stories. Or you had, you know, an uncle that didn't make it home from Vietnam, or did make it home but still isn't home emotionally, you know, 40 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a story about this. And if people didn't serve, there's an incredible amount of compassion right now for people in their 50s and 60s I talk about that say, you know what, I don't really like what we're doing at all with war and deployment, but I completely support the veterans and their families. Well, get involved.
Right.
You know, go to harvestingwisdom.com, take the community survey, click on the link to become a founding member, and download the Homecoming Preparedness Guide, you know, and be of service to others and just, you know, pass it around a little bit. We need to create a groundswell. And there are some people I'm talking to try to keep this from being politicized. You know, I've been asked to do some things with different groups and different political parties, but if we do something with Purple Star families that's politicized for the Tea Party or the Republicans or the Democrats, all of a sudden we lose an entire audience of people because of their belief systems about their political view. So we can't have this hijacked. We've got to have this be a grassroots. That's one of the reasons I was excited about talking on this show. You're dealing with a very open-minded market where you live. These people are very opinionated. And the people of the San Francisco Bay Area, they create movements. And so I'm curious what will come from this conversation, and people really care. And if they'll, you can get a hold of me through my contact information at harvestingwisdom.com, but I want to find out, does this conversation resonate with people? Does Purple Star, veterans and families have a place here? I think it does. I think it critically does. But, you know, that's my opinion. What it's going to take, you know, is 1,000 people signing up saying, I'm a military mom, I'm a military dad. Mm-hmm. This is really important to me that we develop a stronger sense of community and support, because we're losing too many of these guys and gals coming home to hopelessness.
Right, absolutely. Well, I can't even imagine why this would be, you know, a political issue, because it's something that affects everyone, you know, on all aisles. So it's really important. And, yeah, I highly encourage people to check out your website for sure.
It doesn't matter what your political views are or why we're at war, or mm-hmm. if you have nothing to do with war and will never have anything to do with it. I mean, there comes a time when I hope our society can solve conflicts without going to war.
Right.
You know, but I don't see it on the horizon. And the thing is, I'm not, like my son, you know, his passing, I'm not mad at the military. I'm not mad at motorcycles or helmets. You know, I'm upset because, you know, he still had that need to cope with his symptoms by getting on his motorcycle and gunning it way faster than he knew he should have.
Right.
You know, these are tragedies, and these are really, you know, these are the future leaders of our culture that are not going to be, you know, our communities aren't going to be benefiting. And so, you know, these aren't just one-dimensional throwaway people.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, there's a huge challenge, and I think there's a huge amount of people that can definitely get excited about it. And I think it's just about, you know, continuing this conversation and getting more people involved and, you know, and getting more exposure. So, you know, the more people that do get excited about this and get behind it, it will grow. Like any kind of big movement, it starts, you know, with an individual, and it starts at the grassroots.
Well, up in your neck of the woods, there's a gal named Mary Ellen Salzano. There's another lady by the name of Bobby Park, who's they're in charge of this big coalition, this veterans coalition that's forming of all the, it's a cooperative of all the federal, state, local, philanthropic community service organizations who are coming together on a regular basis with meetings to try to find out who's doing what, who's replicating each other, how do we combine our thoughts, how do we get together, how do we form a stronger safety net. So there's a collaborative is what they call it, the California Collaborative. Mm-hmm. And you can probably Google Bobby Park or Mary Ellen Salzano, and you'll see a lot of information about what they're doing. I encourage people to get involved, you know, and help organize the safety net and to strengthen it. It's also being done down in San Diego, and they're modeling these collaboratives to solve the problem. And veterans and families are being served, but it's got a long way to go. So I would say, you know, support these groups and offer what we can, and clear away some of the things that are standing in their way.
Great. Well, John, we're just about out of time, so I want to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, and just if you want to plug your website one more time for viewers so they can get that.
HarvestingWisdom.com.
Okay, wonderful. And I'll just, if the viewers want to get in touch with me, my website is SomaEvolution.org, SomaEvolution.org, where you can find all kinds of resources on consciousness change and transformation. And Rob,
yes,
Stewart?
Yes, for anything regarding yoga, music, movement, and art, you can find that at RudaYoga.com, which is RUDDHA, like Buddha, but with an R. And, yeah, stay healthy.
All right. Well, until next time, keep your head up and keep moving. Thank you.
This is KPLO San Francisco, and you're listening to the best radio station in the world, and this is ISIS.
Unfortunately, unemployment in California is at an all-time high, but if you've recently lost your job, there's a place for you to turn for help. California's community colleges. Community colleges are affordable and can get you back into the workforce quickly. Financial aid is available year-round. That's money that can help you pay for fees like books, supplies, sometimes even rent. So whether it's to get training in a new field or upgrade your skills to a position for a better job, California's community colleges can help. For more information, visit ICanAffordCollege.com. Once again, that's ICanAffordCollege.com.
On Saturday, January 8th at 6:30 p.m., there will be a screening of Incident at Oglala, a documentary about Native political prisoner Leonard Peltier and the federal case against him. The night will also feature music from the newly released Free Leonard Peltier album, which will also be on hand. All of this will take place at the Twin Space, 2111 Mission Street in San Francisco. This event is free to the public.
Are you searching for righteous oldies but goodies? Tune in KPLO Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Phone in your requests. I'm the Autumn King with the longest-running oldie show in the Bay Area, 89.5 FM and KPOO.com. The Autumn King and KPOO is, if you love oldies but goodies, all you need to get back.
This is Reverend Jesse Jackson, and I visit San Francisco. Always listen to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM worldwide, KPOO.com.